You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, who'd have thunk it, but it seems like OJ has figured out these arguing shows on TV are crap. Andy Pollin joins me. We talk being adrift about sports, the Jordan documentary, and cruise ships. All that plus a monster parlay on something I had no idea you could bet on. Your Wednesday dose of normalcy in a global pandemic is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. Thanks for joining me. We're not doing April Fool's jokes or pranks today. I'm not in the mood. I don't know if anyone else is. Maybe you are. Not me. 2020 has already been a shit year to start, and it's barely even begun. So let's get to it. You know, I've been thinking about the nature of optimism versus pessimism in life a lot lately. And certainly now is a real opportune time for one to focus on which camp you generally fall into. And despite my continued optimism about how America will look by July 1st and how it will look again by September 1st, I don't really want to give too much voice to that here. Because in part, optimists who turn out being wrong come off as suckers. Suckers at best. At worst, they come off as dummies. As people are like, duh, I don't get it. Everything's going to be fine. I got a great life. You know, it's going to be fine. Because if something is worse than you think it will be, and if it's a complex thing like this global pandemic is, well, then you get branded as somebody who just doesn't understand it. But if you play the other side, you play the pessimist angle, there seems to be less to lose. If you're wrong, you can always revert to a number of factors. You could say, well, we did a good job of stopping it, or, well, we got lucky, or, well, you know, at least I took this thing seriously. So I kind of think right now in the public sphere of commentary, the optimist side is getting quite a bit underplayed because, generally speaking, nobody wants to be wrong on that side of it. If you're wrong on the other side, A, there's a lot of company, and B, you can at least swaddle yourself in the whole, yeah, but at least I took it seriously. And there's a difference. There's a distinction between not taking it seriously and being reckless and stupid versus just saying, I'm betting the under on this or the under on whatever the latest models are. So, of course, the trick is, and this is also something I've been thinking about, if you paint yourself the gloomiest picture possible, and I'll confess I have done that on more than a few occasions in my head, and I've crumpled it up and thrown it away, and then I've said, wait a minute, hold on, I got to add something to that gloomiest picture possible. And if you envelop yourself in it, if you cannot get away from it, then you're going to severely affect your mental health. And you'll do it right now. It's guaranteed. And it'll continue for as long as it appears that the worst may still happen. You're essentially guaranteeing yourself a degree of mental stress if that's the route you go. Whereas if you take the other side, you're kind of delaying the possibility of mental stress for later. And it may never come. So then, if it doesn't, you would not have paid any mental price at all, if you can pull it off. But then you run the risk of a deeper disappointment if you think for the best and it turns out to be worse. Then you are potentially setting yourself up for crushing and even double mental sickness when you're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I thought this was going to be gone by now. It's almost like I think you have to somehow thread the needle, or I'm trying to, where you briefly envision the worst. You accept that it may happen. You account for that, and then you put it away. And you don't think about it, which is a hell of a mental trick. It's not easy to do. But I think it also applies in life as well, not just pandemics. Whether you get sick or your family member, someone you know gets sick, or your job is in jeopardy, or business that you started is struggling, how do you contemplate the worst and then put it aside and still live in the present and still be, generally speaking, an optimist? I don't know, but it's an interesting exercise right now, to say the least. And as always, I look to Lou Saban, the great Lou Saban.
You can get it done.
That's right.
You can get it done. What's more, you gotta get it done.
All right, Andy Pollin, just a quick second. A couple of items. Kimberly Jones reports for USA Today that Chris Godwin, the former number 12 in Tampa Bay, offered Tom Brady the number with no strings attached. No transaction. He said, I bend the knee to the GOAT. Here you go, Tom Brady. Godwin will now switch to number 14. And he's getting lots of accolades on Twitter. I think he should have got money. I think some coin to the realm, as you know, Hank Stram would have said, deserved to be exchanged there. Tom Brady is rich as fuck. Look at the contract he just signed. But no, in today's day and age, it's like, you better give it up. Look, you know, Montana switched numbers from 16 to 19 when he went from San Francisco to Kansas City. Kansas City, I believe, had retired it for the great Len Dawson, so he wore 19. It was fine. Can be done. It has been done. In India, cops are wearing coronavirus helmets to scare residents into lockdown in India. Oh, wow. That is one hell of a weird rubber coronavirus helmet mask thing. And when the helmet mask with a big coronavirus thing on it doesn't work, I believe batons, fire hoses, and police dogs are the next step to get people into lockdown. And then there's this. I will comfortably say I'm never, ever going to dig into this, but Baseball Digest, the magazine / newspaper, Baseball Digest announced that it will unlock its archive and make its complete inventory of more than 800 issues from 1942 to 2009 free on its digital website, baseballdigestarchive.com. Imagine going back through the old Baseball Digest archives and saying, oh, here's one from 1983. There's a minor leaguer named Kirby Puckett. He's supposedly really good. Five-tool outfielder. I gotta go watch this guy. Oh, those were good times. Hey, nerds, and that includes me, whatever it takes to kill the time in quarantine, you gotta do it. All right, let's see what Andy Pollin is up to today. All right, hold on a second.
All right.
Oh, there you are.
There we go.
Hello.
Hello.
This is FaceTime audio, which supposedly should be cleaner and better. And I have no idea why, Andy, that as the default setting when I mash your phone button, it gives me FaceTime audio. So here we are. I see you do sound actually really good. How do I sound? Check one, two, check one, two.
Sound great?
Okay, very good. Well, here we are. I think it is, let's see, the 11th of March was when Rudy Gobert tested positive and everything ground to a halt. So today is April 1st when people hear this. So we are, and you know my math is suspect, this would be day 20. Day 20, adrift at sea like Tom Hanks in that stupid fucking volleyball. Wilson!
Yes. I'll give you a little more grim one. The book by Laura Hillenbrand, Unbroken, which was made into a movie as well. And I think he was adrift at sea for 48 days, which
no
is based
way.
Yeah. And it's a true story. Lou Zamperilli, I think was his name. He was a track star, almost an Olympian, ran at USC and somehow survived it. And that is part of his incredible story. Well,
hold on 2 seconds. This FaceTime audio is for shit. I'm calling you right back. Stand by. See, this is the problem with technology. It's never what it's promised. You could hear the breakups there. I'm just going to call Andy right now on his regular mobile.
How's this?
Way better. Way better. A million times better. Okay. So yeah. So, and he was adrift at sea and then he was imprisoned and tortured in a Japanese imprisonment camp.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, she did an incredible job of writing the story. And then the movie I thought was very well done. I mean, he lived to be 93 and you look at what he goes through. If you watch the movie and I read the book as well,
brutal.
You'd say, how does he live to be 33, much less 93?
Right. So in these times in which we're all bellyaching about what will likely be at least 60 days without sports, if not more, that we're soft. We're so fucking soft. We got to toughen up on this, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, stories like this guy, how about, you know, you want to pick me up in terms of hardship? Read about the Donner Party that got stranded. Did you ever see the PBS documentary on them?
Yes, I did. It was incredible. Yeah, that they had set out across the country with no real great plan. And what do you know? They ran into weather and disease and wagons breaking down.
Yeah, they ended up eating themselves in the Sierra Nevada mountains in a blizzard because basically they had started too late. They were leaving from like somewhere in the middle of the country. And they're like, we better get going here. You know, it's a long trip out there. We don't
like
want to get.
Wife. I got to get one more thing. Hold on.
Right. And what's amazing is the documentary relied only on like letters and writings that have been left behind by the survivors. And to be able to put together something that was visually compelling with very little visual material was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if we had gone through this 25 years ago, we wouldn't have, you know, all the technology that we have where we can FaceTime one another. We can talk people in our business. And you've been doing it on a regular basis. But a lot of people now are doing shows from home and so forth. Couldn't be able to do that. You know, so there is some silver lining, I guess.
One silver lining. You tell me what you think about this as a keen observer of society and life and people and governments in general. My one silver lining is this is the last time we're going to fucking do this. That the next time any little bug gets sideways, I suspect we are going to go full throttle and say stop ball.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and think of the more need for medical professionals. I mean, you used to hear, oh, we got too many doctors. No, we don't have enough doctors.
Right.
So, yeah. So next time something happens, we will, if somebody coughs too loud, you take them in an ambulance to the hospital.
Yeah. I would think that once there's identified a new strange bug that can fuck you up, that we're going to have no problem closing all the borders. Right. We're going to have a giant fucking warehouse in Nebraska full of N95 masks, right? Better have another warehouse next to it with ventilators. And hopefully we're just going to say we're never going to repeat this again.
Right. We need to use the Harvard model. Like when the Ivy League got first sniff of this, they said, "Up, tournament's off." And people said, "Well, what are you doing? You're overreacting."
Yeah.
Well, no, we should have taken their cue.
I know. But you know what? Looking back, and I don't want to get into this blame game because people mm-hmm. will then get mad at me because they'll sound like I'm making excuses for somebody, anybody. But bottom line is there was no political will to shut down all international travel. And I mean all international travel when it needed to be shut down. Right. In other words, like Idris Elba got it by going to this thing. Don't call me Herndon. Decline. Thank you. Idris Elba got it when he was over at some, you know, highfalutin, you know, charity event where the Prime Minister of Canada, his wife got it.
Right.
They were at the same event. And that was like in late January, early February. Like, who the hell was going to say, you know what, I'm sorry, Idris, but you're not allowed to fly out of the country because we're afraid this thing is going to get really big. It just, or to keep Tom Hanks and his wife from going to Australia. Like, who's going to do that well ahead of time?
Right. Right. I mean, we've gotten to this point where international travel is so easy and people do it all the time mm-hmm. that to shut it down would be unthinkable. Look at how everything got waded into. First, the NBA is discussing it. Now, I heard today that Stephon Marbury contacted Commissioner Adam Silver on March 8th, 4 days before he shut the league down, and said, "Oh, you better do something. I've been in China. I've seen what's happened here. You better do that."
And really?
Supposedly Silver thanked him for contacting him, but it took another 4 days and Rudy Gobert to shut right. down the league.
Right.
And you know, and Stephon Marbury used to be a whack job when he was in the NBA.
But he got huge in China.
Yeah, now he's helping out. He's providing masks and he's providing medical help.
I saw the story. He said he's going to buy 10 million masks at cost, which is like $2.95 each. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, who's 30 million is going to foot the bill on this? And how do we know the masks work? Because a number of countries got supplies from China, like test kits and masks, and like, this stuff's shit, doesn't work.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they could probably mail a few in advance and see
I guess.
If they work.
Well, yeah. Anything's better than nothing at this point, I guess. But yeah, so we'll talk about for a second the ideas of, well, what maybe we can get back the league by doing this and that, and we'll get to the Jay Williams cruise boat, the love boat NBA
thing. It's two boats, by the way.
Okay, all right, in just a second, but we'll get to that. But first, and I was talking about being like Tom Hanks, where time just melts away to nothing, and you're mm-hmm. on an island with a stupid volleyball. You have a friend, Warren, you've talked mm-hmm. about for years, who you know from the gym,
right.
who, despite being your good friend, does not care for sports at all. Not a sports fan, literally.
Not that he doesn't like sports, but he doesn't watch sports, doesn't follow sports. And I noticed this one day at the height of Tebow mania, where we were next to each other on Stairmasters, and I looked up at one of the televisions in the gym, and I said, "Oh, Tebow's really gone mainstream. He's on the Today Show." And he said, "Who's Tebow?" And I nearly fell off the Stairmaster.
You nearly wrecked your Stairmaster.
Yeah. And so then I began to investigate. I said, "You never watch sports?" "No, I'm not really interested." Interested in staying in shape, liked to bike, but didn't follow. So I thought to myself, well, gee, if I didn't spend time watching sports, talking about sports, reading about sports, what would I do with all this time? Well, here we are. So I called him for a show that I filled in for today on mm-hmm. Tony's show on ESPN 630. And we talked about it. And we got to the point where he said, "Well, you know, I have the cleanest garage in the neighborhood." And so he's been dealing. Now, he did say there are times when he's needed sports. He's now retired. But at one time, he did a lot of traveling as a salesman. And he did a lot of work in North Carolina. And his son, he said, was a big Maryland basketball fan. So before he would go down there to make sales, his son would prep him on ACC basketball so he could at least fake his way through it if it got to that point.
How about them, client. Looks at notes, Tar Heels?
Yeah. Right.
They sure are good this year.
Right. If you had to get past Roy Williams, he was in trouble.
Well, I've always thought about how sports grounds us and it puts us on a familiar walk path through the months mm-hmm. and every year, and that it is a comforting thing, and it's like landmarks and mileposts you get used to that flow from one to the other. And I've often thought, what would happen if you just didn't like sports? Would you just drift through the year? What would you look forward to?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think he has things that he likes. He likes movies. But yeah, that's true, that the marking of time. So, for example, this week, I would be greatly looking forward to Saturday in the Final Four. I love that day.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't have that. And for Warren, it's like, oh, that's Saturday. It's, you know.
It's like any other Saturday.
Yeah,
it's like a fall Saturday, a winter Saturday, a summer Saturday. It's just Saturday.
Yeah, you're right. So we're so conditioned, yeah, by the certain times of the year where you're doing specific things related to sports, and now we're not.
Yeah, well, it's an adjustment for everybody. I think one thing about the NBA, we'll get to the Jason Williams idea in a second, but if the NBA decides to rejigger their schedule and start at Christmas, so Christmas Day is opening day, which would be mm-hmm. phenomenal, big triple, quadruple, quintuple header of games, and to run their season all the way through to like August 1st, home run. That's a home run schedule adjustment for the ages, in which there's this fertile ground for an indoor sport in late June, July, and even early August. It's unoccupied territory, Andy.
Right. And what happened, see, the reason it didn't happen is at one time baseball was the most popular sport. And the NBA was not that big a deal, really, until Magic and Bird came along in the late 70s. And so what happened, I looked this up. When the Celtics were winning all those titles in the 60s, the season wrapped up in like mid-April. They were done.
Really?
And the reason
– How many games were there?
Well, there were same number of games, but you didn't have as many rounds of playoffs.
So there was 82 games. Did they play doubleheaders?
No, but you had fewer days off. And again, you're only playing a best of seven Eastern Conference final and a best of seven Western and then the finals. So you only had two rounds of playoffs.
As late as what year was that, roughly?
I think it expanded by, I think, like 1970.
Okay, so this is 60s.
May.
In the 60s, the NBA season would wrap up in April.
In April. And the reason was baseball was so popular, they had to get the hell out of the way for baseball. Well, that's not the case anymore. Baseball's got its audience, but it's not number one. And if there were NBA games mixed in, we would certainly watch them. I mean, baseball's on all the time. It's like you can get it whenever you want.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. And I think starting at that point, NBA in October, November, who cares? So, yeah, Christmas Day is a great time to start the season.
Christmas Day splash and then eat up late, deep into July. I mean, it's fucking indoors. Who cares? And you know what the NBA has also become? It's become a big outdoor watch party sport.
Right.
A la soccer matches in Europe. And so if you then are playing the finals or the conference finals in July, you got four cities where people are gathering outdoors to watch the games on Jumbotrons, drink and have fun. It's a slam dunk for the NBA.
Not only that, players are used to the summer. That's where you get your game. You play on their kids. They play it on the playground. They play summer league. They play Olympics are during the summer. So it's
the problem is the Olympics.
Well, okay,
the Olympics are going to be a problem because they're very hard to say no to. It's very hard for all the federations to go, you know what? We'll send our amateurs like it was in the old day. They want the stars.
No, they won't do that. No. It's too good for business for the NBA.
Can you accommodate that?
Well, they do it like hockey used to do it, where they stop the season for a couple of weeks for them to play.
But this would be during the peak of the playoffs in July.
Well, you'd have some players who weren't in the playoffs anymore, and you'd have to say, I mean, look, hockey did this when the year that the Capitals went to the finals the first time, which was 98, you know, I don't think they wrapped up until July. And the reason was they had taken a break in the middle of the season for the Olympics. So I think it's doable. Now, I don't know, maybe the playoffs don't end until August and it is possible to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But somehow they're not giving it up, because what the Dream Team has done for the revenue for the league, what it launched, is unbelievable, and they're not going to throw that back.
Well, not only that, but I mean the way that the NBA got a foothold in Europe and elsewhere around the world, Argentina, South America, you name it, it's been great for the league, because these European players, Andy, they looked at the game differently than NBA player or than American players. Every big man in Europe learned to fucking shoot.
Right.
And so that then changed the NBA, where if you're a big man that can't shoot, you went extinct really quickly in the last 5 years. See Marcin Gortat.
Mm-hmm. Right. The
Wizards couldn't play him because he couldn't shoot threes, and not even at a little rate. You have to be able to hit at a little rate in today's NBA. That's all because of the European player, and it's all because they looked at the game differently than Americans.
Right, and plus the when they got the game into China, and thanks to Daryl Morey's tweet, got squashed this year, but 6 billion people is a nice audience to have.
Pretty nice. Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's talk about this Jay Williams idea of getting the season done by hook or by crook, and his idea is cruise ships.
Two of them, a Eastern Conference cruise ship and a Western Conference cruise ship. And the only ones who would be let onto the ship would be the NBA players and their families. And they would
play. And the referees. Yeah, and the league officials and the coaches and the TV crews and Jeff Van Gundy's personal assistant. But you could screen them all. You're right. You could tightly screen them all, make sure the whole thing is sanitized. There'd be no fans per se.
Right.
Get TV cameras. These ships are big enough to hold, 3,000 to 4,000 people?
Oh, yeah. I've been on one. And they could certainly get 2 courts inside. Now, they have to be inside because, remember, they've been playing these games on aircraft carriers, and they've had problems with condensation on the court. Everybody's slipping all over the place. So they would have them inside. And that you'd play the playoffs out that way. And I guess you'd flip a coin as to which ship would host the finals. I don't know how that works.
No, what you do. So that's great. So you have, I didn't hear this full idea, but now you're filling me in. So an East Coast cruise ship and a West Coast cruise ship. Yep. And then as the playoffs are going on, the cruise ships start sailing toward each other and they meet at the Suez Canal. Boom! Or the Panama Canal, whichever canal connects the two continents.
I guess, Or I guess they could be docked, too. I mean, they've used ships as hotels before, including the disaster in Jacksonville.
Oh, God, yeah. Remember at the Brazil Olympics, the NBA team stayed on the cruise ship?
It was complete mess. It was Allen Iverson and his boys running wild, and Larry Brown trying to control them. It was a mess. But that's the idea. Now it's at this point, 2 weeks into this, you go, okay, come on, that's Meshuggah. 2 months from now, you might say, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, it's impossible to tell. We're 3 weeks in. This is the 3 week mark of when it all flew apart. To think you can see 3 months ahead, I'm not going to be in that business because I've already looked dumb enough on this already, making timid little half predictions. So I just like to see month to month how it looks. And yeah, it could be worse, could be a lot worse, could be better, could be a lot better. Yeah. We don't know. Let's hope for the best.
The big one to me is the Herb Street thing that he threw out last week that really rocked me. And when you think about this, let's say that we're going to either test the fans who go into the stadium or not have any fans. But let's say the Redskins are getting ready to play the Cowboys 1 week. And one of the Redskins is testing positive for the virus. You got to quarantine the whole team for 2 weeks. You can't play the game. He's saying you can't have football again until you have a vaccine. I don't know how far-fetched that is.
You know, vaccines are not 100% effective, though.
Understand, but at least you'd have a little bit more control than you have now, because there's no, China just today, they were going to resume, they had plans to resume in May.
And
that got pushed back too. So who knows, it's
I can't imagine the position we're in now. So I guess I should start imagining other things. We'll see. It's a long way away. And I'm hoping there's a lot of things that are being introduced to this that will change the vector of it all. But, knock on wood, I guess, is all you can say. Yeah. So is Jay Williams' idea a dumb idea?
At the moment, it's a dumb idea. As we get moving along here, it may not be.
Okay. What about doing the same thing, but say in Vegas?
Vegas, I don't know. I mean, are the casinos open again?
No.
Okay.
The hotels are empty.
Model. Yeah, the UNLV apparently has a whole bunch of practice courts and that they could possibly quarantine everybody on the campus of UNLV. I don't know what it looks like, but maybe they could do that. That's a possibility. I don't know. But, yeah, anything's in play right now.
So, luckily, we got a bit of good news on Tuesday, and that is the Jordan documentary, the 10-part Jordan documentary that ESPN is putting together, has been pushed up, will be released in April. What is it, April 23rd, I want to say?
19th.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable idea. And the fact that they've kept it under wraps for over 20 years, almost 25 years, right?
What do you mean under wraps?
Well, all the footage was shot during the 97-98 season, which was everybody knew was going to be the end of the Bulls because Jackson wasn't going to be renewed and Pippen was going to leave in free agency. So they were breaking up the Bulls.
Oh, so this documentary footage was all from one season.
Yeah, now I guess they followed some of it up with interviews, but all the actual footage is following the team it navigates that season.
See, I thought it was going to be a 10-part on here's Michael Jordan from the time he was in Carolina all the way through. Oh, it's just
that's why it's called The Last Dance.
Okay, got it. Wow, yeah. Okay, that's amazing.
So it's almost like, you know, there was a documentary done on the Ali Foreman fight called When We Were Kings. The fight took place in 1974. The documentary wasn't released until 96. So this is somewhat similar to that. And we're going to find out things that went on. I mean, this team had everything. It had Rodman. It had Jordan punching people in the head. It was insane.
Who did he punch in the practice for guarding him too hard?
Steve Kerr, of all people.
Kerr was like being a pain in the ass. Like, it's practice, man. Stop guarding me so hard.
The level-headed Steve Kerr, who's the voice of reason in so many things now.
Yeah, crazy. It's funny. There's stories about Jordan ridiculing Stacey King, calling him Burger King and shit like that. Will Perdue, according to one story I heard, would know which seat on the plane Jordan always liked to sit in, and he would make sure to get on the plane before Jordan, and then Jordan would have to pay him off with a couple grand to get him out of the seat.
Smart.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, in this day and age, that would never happen. You know, LeBron has his seat, and it's well known. You're not fucking sitting in LeBron's seat.
Right. And you'd also think after a couple times that Purdue did that, that Jordan would say, I'm going to have you traded if you don't do this, if you don't stop this.
Exactly. Like a lot of stories, some of it may actually be true, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Have you been following on the OJ Twitter updates?
Oh, of what he says?
Yeah. Do you follow OJ on Twitter?
I don't follow OJ on Twitter, but sometimes I see a retweet of something he said or done. And, you know, I mean, when he got out of jail, he was angry because somebody was leaving a fantasy team or something. I don't know. Yeah.
I want you to hear this, and I'll just let you react, okay?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Twitter world, yours truly. Well, I, like most of you, just been trying to stay out of harm's way, playing a little bit of golf, but for the most part, been just kind of hanging around the house, watching a lot of Netflix and on demand. A little boring, you know. Got a little tough there, you know. I was trying to watch sports for a little while.
Listen to this.
It was interesting, you know, seeing what was going on with Brady and Bridgewater and Gurley and the guys. But I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Cam Newton if he's healthy enough to come back. Because we know if he is, he'll be real good for some team. But I tried to watch sports, you know. It's hard to watch these sports channels because it seems like all they do is argue over the same thing over and over and over. I mean, I tried to watch this 100-year top basketball player thing they had, a playoff among the top basketball players. But then I saw Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, was eliminated in round 32. This may be the greatest college basketball player of all time. He won 3 straight national championships, took UCLA to those titles. It would have been 4 if they would have let freshmen play at the time, but they didn't.
It's funny how he knows so much about Lou Alcindor, but doesn't know how to pronounce his name.
Well, they were, it's funny, the timing, because when Alcindor was winning 3 straight championships at UCLA, OJ at the same time was at USC. And OJ, you could make the case. I mean, it's hard to do for anybody who didn't see him play and the person that he became. But it's hard to imagine anybody better as a running back in college than O.J. Simpson. He was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
At USC.
Right.
Yeah.
So how funny is he? He's like, seems like they just argue about the same things over and over again.
Yeah, it's a pretty good gig. It's better than being in jail, OJ.
I know. I was thinking about this, as crazy and as unsettling as this is and hard as this is for so many people. For OJ, this is the biggest nothing burger in the world. He's been in prison, what, he served like 12 years for that attempted burglary?
Was it 12?
Eight years, yeah. Something. It was a decent stretch. Yeah. On top of the, how many years was he in jail during the trial?
I think it was only a year. A little over a year.
Right. Yeah. And he somehow has compartmentalized the vicious slashing and near decapitation of his ex-wife and her boyfriend.
Yeah, but I think he revels in going places and knowing people despise him. I think he's gotten to the point where that kind of turns him on. And he may miss that he could show up on a golf course and know people are sneering at him, but also people are looking at, oh, wow, that's OJ.
I think a lot of people now, when they see him, are very nice to him.
Because fame is big.
Yeah. Well, it's fame is big, and he has this goofy sort of persona on Twitter that he puts out.
Yes.
He doesn't tweet any. His only tweets are videos, which is actually smart. Because then you can't have it taking out of context. It's the darndest thing. And I think most people, Andy, they're like, well, he didn't murder my mom and her boyfriend, so what do I care?
I guess.
It sounds harsh, but that's just basically it. Do you miss working out, Andy?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was never weather dependent like I am now. And so I would just go to the gym. And as I've told people, I would just check in, turn off my brain, do what I did. And I was in and out of there an hour 15, an hour and a half. Now I have to plan it out. And things are closing around me. So what I started to do was to go over to the local high school, Northwest High School, which is about a quarter mile from my house, and run up and down the stands. Well, now they've padlocked the stadium, so I can't do that anymore. Okay. So there's a hill next to it, so I kind of go up and down that. And
ooh, like Walter Payton.
Yeah, but I'm not Walter Payton. I mean, I'm more like Walter Brennan, if anybody understands that reference.
All right, what about Andy finally buying a Peloton?
I've thought about that.
You, of all people, who loves working out and loves bicycles,
yes,
Peloton.
The problem with the Peloton, the $2,300 price tag is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is, in order to have the program to be in the Peloton thing, that's like almost $60 a month, which is high. I mean, that's almost a high-end gym. So
$60 a month. Yeah, you only pay $25 a month for your gym.
$20.
Are they going to give you a refund while they're closed?
They did bill me for, I guess, the month of March, so I don't know. We'll play it by ear, but I'm not going to kick up a fuss. I mean, it's only 20 a month.
You're a good man for doing that.
Yeah.
All right, Andy, hang in there. Have you watched Tiger King on Netflix?
I watched the whole thing, yes.
All right, next week we'll go over it, all right?
Good.
It was pretty spectacular, wasn't it, in its dysfunctionality?
I can't say I enjoyed it, but I couldn't turn it off.
That's perfectly said. You're a wordsmith. Yep. Andy, good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks.
You too, Zave. Take care.
There you go. Yeah. That is really the perfect description of it, don't you think, when you boil it down? Can't say I enjoyed it, but I couldn't turn it off. Speaking of Peloton, Rory McIlroy is apparently the PGA Tour's Peloton king, defeating all challengers with some eye-popping numbers. I don't know what good numbers are, but apparently they're posting them. They're like, yeah, damn, Rory is getting after it. So, that's good. That's good for him to keep busy, while doing that. A Nevada mobile bettor at William Hill US turned $50 into $9,676 after hitting a 10 team parlay on, wait for it, Ukrainian, wait for it, table tennis. Oh my God. Wow. And then I'll give you one recommendation here. Super 70s Sports on Twitter. I've given you Club Pro Guy if you're a golfer. At Super 70s Sports. It's clips. It's pictures. It's funny captions. No, it's not all from the 70s. Some are from the 80s. And I'm looking at this week in baseball reel.
Brock Philadelphia's Mike Schmidt slide is really great.
Bump, bump.
The great base runner bump, Lou Brock is blocked off.
With Mel Allen announcing. I mean, this was a weekly wrap-up show of This Week in Baseball. It aired on the weekends, on Saturday mornings, if I remember as a kid, growing up in the late 70s, early 80s. And it was funny. It was just a lot of good highlights. Twin killings, good double plays.
Maybe we order.
They're showing giant signs in the outfield. This is when you could, you know, make a homemade sheet for a sign and hang it over the outfield wall, and nobody would harass you. That's the way it was. Now it's like, yeah, we have corporate sponsors. No, we're not going to. Like, the only signs you can have at ballparks now are the approved signs that are a couple feet wide by a couple feet wide. Posters, basically. But back in the 70s and 80s, people would take bed sheets and put duct tape on them and spell things out and unfurl them on the upper deck and over the outfield wall. And it was like, yay, that's cool. Those days, sadly, are gone. My time is gone today, even though I could go on forever and ever and ever. I think you've had enough. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Remember, you can subscribe to Fridays to get a full 5 days of me a week, not just four. It's a mere 16 cents a day when you amortize it, and it's probably a write-off, Jerry. I don't know how, but you're the one writing it off. Thanks for listening. Download the Zabecast app. That is free. It'll aggregate all of the Zabecasts in one place, and I appreciate you people keeping me as grounded and sane as normal as possible during these times. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Wednesday. Welcome to April, and we will see you next time.